I'm here with Minister for Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation, Murray Rankin. Earlier this month, the BC government gave over $7.2 million to the Office of the Wet'suwet'en for the Hereditary Chiefs to facilitate discussions on the MOU around rights and title signed earlier last year and to engage in unity building. All of this is, of course, happening as thousands of workers put together the Coastal GasLink natural gas pipeline, scheduled to start construction this fall in an area that got national attention with arrests and saw blockades in a Shutdown Canada movement. Now, Minister Rankin, just for context, could you tell me your experience working with the Wet'suwet'en, Hereditary Chiefs, and others around this issue?
Well, thanks very much, Chris, and thank you for letting me have this opportunity to chat with you. I was involved for many years before I went into politics as a treaty negotiator. I did that across British Columbia. I also worked in the Yukon, and I've worked for industry, First Nations, and government. At one point, when I had left the role of Member of Parliament, I was asked by Premier Horgan in 2019 to take on the task of trying to represent the province in negotiations with the Wet'suwet'en Hereditary Chiefs. And that I did for quite some time. And then I, of course, stopped doing so once I decided to run for office. And here I am now responsible, have the honor of representing British Columbia on Indigenous issues across the province. So I have some direct experience with this set of negotiations with the Hereditary Chiefs.
Mm-hmm. Now, to that $7.2 million, how is that meant to help with unity and who is being unified? Because I did speak with Chief Waz of the Hereditary Chiefs, and it doesn't seem quite clear. Obviously, there's no strings attached, but what was it meant for?
Well, you know, this is consistent with work we've done, as I said, back into 2019 when we started these historic talks. We aren't talking about LNG. We aren't talking about particular transactions. We're talking about the Delgamuukw Gestayway case, if you want to get back to it, because in 1997, the Supreme Court of Canada said that the Hereditary Chiefs who had brought that case to the Supreme Court did have Aboriginal title in the Wet'suwet'en territory, but they did not, Chris, tell us exactly what that meant or where it was located. So sadly, it took us essentially a generation, 24 years or so, before we got back to the table. And that's what we ended up trying to do, trying to figure out exactly what Aboriginal title meant, what the court could have meant when they made that historic ruling. Some of your listeners will know that Aboriginal title was identified in another case in BC back in 2014, a case involving the Chilcotin people in the Chilcotin part of the province. And they identified 1,700 square kilometers of territory where there was, on the facts, Aboriginal title. And of course, since that time, the federal government and the provincial government have been meeting with the Chilcotin to try to figure out exactly what that means on the ground. Our thinking was, with the Hereditary Chiefs of the Wet'suwet'en, that we ought to try to find a way to avoid going back to court, to see if we could do it by way of negotiation. And that's, of course, where we are. Now, to the funding that was provided is involved in a number of activities that are of great importance to the Hereditary Chiefs as we figure out on the ground what this historic negotiation could mean and lead to. Ecosystem monitoring, wildlife monitoring, water stewardship issues, and also governance. Critically important, Chris, that the Wet'suwet'en have acknowledged is it is the Wet'suwet'en Nation that has Aboriginal rights and title, according to the courts. And that collectivity has been historically represented by the Hereditary Chiefs. But there is, I think everyone would acknowledge, a lack of clarity within the nation as to just what that means. We've seen discussions that have gone on between the Hereditary Chiefs and the elected chiefs, and some of the communities in Wet'suwet'en are more engaged with this process than others. After all, it covers their traditional territory covers a vast tract of land, and different communities are engaged to different degrees. So one of the key things we've urged on both the elected and on the hereditary leaders is that there we would hope that they could come up with some unity so that when, if we're successful in coming up with an agreement, that it speaks for that nation as a whole, the collectivity of the Wet'suwet'en people, the clans, the houses, that they have to provide their you know, we would expect that they would show that they're committed to this process and agree with what's been agreed to. And that is the challenge of unity building, getting a constitution, getting a governance system that, you know, is accountable and represents the interests and speaks for the people of the Wet'suwet'en. And that's a challenge. And that's what some of that funding is for, to assist them in that work. It hasn't been easy, Chris, during a pandemic. Imagine trying to do this historic unity building, you know, on a Zoom call. It's not easy. There have been challenges. But hopefully, as we come out the other end of this pandemic, we can get back on track and that work can continue.
I think those are good points you brought up. The specifics are really where it gets hard. But speaking of governance, the MOU was signed with the federal government as well. Chief Waz told me the province is reaching out, doing a pretty good job in his view, but the hereditary chiefs haven't heard enough from the federal government. Now, have you tried organizing talks with the Wet'suwet'en and Minister Bennett, or are you waiting on this sort of unity building coming with a one vision with the hereditary chiefs?
I don't know exactly what has motivated that, led to that concern, because we are connecting with the federal government on so many fronts across the province. We have a very strong relationship with Minister Bennett and, of course, Minister Mark Miller, who is the Indigenous Services Minister. And I think we're having a meeting coming up in the next while, which will include Minister Bennett and myself and the hereditary chiefs. I look forward to that. But we have worked, as you rightly point out, since the MOU was negotiated, we've worked with the federal government and the hereditary chiefs. Before that, it was British Columbia, which after all has primary concern about the lands and waters of the territory. We're doing bilateral discussions. The federal government were not involved until the MOU, allowed them to enter into these title and rights negotiations. So, you know, we've had a longer time at the table with the Wet'suwet'en on this issue than the federal government. But we're working closely together now.
Now, there's also a regional engagement group. I mean, there's so many people involved in all these talks for non-Indigenous communities. Your press release also said there was a core advisory council that started meeting regularly in February. Who created the council and why were they chosen? And who's on it?
I don't have the names of the individuals in front of me, but their objective has been, as we've done in other parts of the province where we are engaged in, you know, reconciliation agreements in some places, treaties and others, we've always had advisory groups that represent the interests of local government, industry, ranchers, various people whose interest will be affected by any change we make through negotiations of Aboriginal rights and title. We really hope that what we can come up with will involve prosperity that's shared in the northwest of British Columbia. And so we have a regional engagement group, as you pointed out, and then we have a core group, a smaller group, to try to make sure that whatever we do is understood, that we are transparent with the communities, and so there'll be no surprises as we go forward together. Because, you know, back to the famous Delgamuukw Gestayway case in 1997, Chief Justice Lemaire famously said, "Let's face it, we're all here to stay." Mm-hmm. And okay, so if we're doing this historic work, we don't want it to be of concern to the non-Indigenous communities, or indeed other Indigenous groups in the Northwest,
right,
who worry that there are problems.
Right. What is the role of those other Indigenous groups and non-Indigenous communities who live here when it comes to, I guess, specific things with the Wet'suwet'en? Because obviously you don't want to delve in internal politics, but at the same time, those internal politics really do affect the larger area so much.
It is true. And one of the challenges in every part of British Columbia that we face is when British sovereignty was asserted in this territory, 1846 is the date where the courts have held that occurred. There were many, many dozens and of communities in the Northwest of different indigenous people with different language groups and different cultures and the like. And we have, as you then look at it with 2021 eyes, you see overlaps in their territory because there were no boundaries that were delineated, you know, with maps and so forth at the time. But there were understandings that the communities had achieved over many, many years. And so these areas of overlap are difficult. Because nations will differ on exactly what the scope of their territory is. So that requires us to work together. But it also requires the nations themselves in their own culturally appropriate ways to just sit down and delineate those boundaries.
So a lot of work to be done there. Now, the MOU is obviously meant to be about the future. It's meant to kind of give guidelines and guidance to anybody who wants to live and work on the territory. It's not supposed to be about Coastal GasLink because that is something that's already in, you know, is already happening, frankly. But, I mean, that's the elephant in the room, right? I mean, Coastal GasLink, if this issue can't reach a nonviolent compromise, never mind a compromise, can this negotiation avoid future issues around development?
I think it's really important that I emphasize what I said at the outset, Chris. We were very clear that the work we ended up trying to do in 2019 and then with the federal government joining later was not about a particular project. Mm-hmm. It was not about CGL. It was not about anything more than the need to get on with that work. Sadly, a generation after the Chief Justice told us to start negotiating and figuring out what the Wet'suwet'en Aboriginal rights and title meant in the territory. And so that is what we're trying to do. Now, the project was that you refer to has been approved. It's been permitted by the various government authorities. And we have not, that has not been the subject of our negotiations at all. It goes on, and that work is going on in parallel to our historic negotiations.
Yeah, when you say in parallel, are you or anyone else in the provincial government or working for the province talking to the Wet'suwet'en about this pipeline?
I am not. Our ministry and the work that you and I are discussing are not doing so. I know that there are other people in the provincial government that have responsibility for implementing the decision to allow the Coastal Gas Pipeline to proceed. That's a permitted project. And of course, regulators from the various agencies are engaged. But we are not. No, our work is very focused on what we've been discussing.
Right. Your ministry is not involved in that at all then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No. The reason I wanted to ask that is just because while it's parallel work, it seems like it would affect it, that it would kind of cross over if things go bad into negotiations about future projects. I mean, that's you're setting up future, you know, LNG, forestry, fishing, go on and on, even housing, recreation. And if this can't be worked out with whoever's working with the Wet'suwet'en on it, would it not affect this work on the MOU?
But we really hope that the work that, you know, all of the effort that so many people have made to get us to this table, to get us to this place where we can finally put meat on the bones of the Delgamuukw Gustayway case, that nothing will derail us from that. It's too important. The courts have made clear that they expect us to be engaged in this negotiation. We have, as we said, with the core advisory group and the regional engagement group, notwithstanding the pandemic, we're still trying to ensure that non-Indigenous groups and other Indigenous groups that aren't Wet'suwet'en are aware of our work and understand what we're doing and the importance of it. We don't want any specific project to stop us from getting this job done. It's long overdue.
Mm-hmm. What are the next steps in this work?
Well, the next steps are to come up with an affirmation agreement, if you will, that will be a step along the way. And then the final result will be an agreement that would lay down on the ground what Aboriginal title and rights means in Wet'suwet'en territory. And that sounds like a vague statement, but what does it What does it actually mean? As we saw in the Chilcotin example I referred to earlier, Chris, people are trying to understand how would we regulate certain activities, be they involved in water or land or forestry? What involvement in that economy would the Wet'suwet'en wish? What would the expression of Aboriginal title mean in 21st century terms? How would governance occur? People talk about the importance of self-governance, and our government, of course, is committed to that. Well, how does that work in specific terms? How does that work in the face of the fact that the province and the federal government have been asserting regulatory authority over lands and resources since 1846? Mm-hmm. Well, how do we factor in a key role for the rights and title holders? And that is not something that is easily achieved. That requires a lot of good faith negotiations among the party, and of course accountability to the non-Indigenous people who are also part of this equation as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, you bring up the Chilcotin quite a bit, but are you using any other nations' examples as maybe a way to move forward? What comes to mind living in the Northwest is actually the Tahltan, who kind of avoid this whole working with the province in conjunction with industry and work directly when it comes to industry. And mining is the big thing there, of course. And I just spoke with the president of the Tahltan Nation, Chad Day, and with Skeena Resources, just about how they're working together. And they just created a new protected area. This seems Ice to Mountain. Involve... Yeah. Sorry, what's that?
Ice Mountain, it's called. Yes, that yes. New conservancy. That's right. No, that every... You know, we have so many First Nations in British Columbia, as I mentioned, different linguistic groups and cultures, coastal, interior. It's fascinating, and every nation has a different perspective. The Tahltan Nation, President Chad Day, has done remarkable work in, as you say, engaging with the mining industry and other industries, and dealing with the local economy in a way that works for the Tahltan. That isn't necessarily how things would be in the Okanagan or on mm-hmm. Vancouver Island. I mean, every approach is different. There is no one-size-fits-all model. I have enormous respect for President Chad Day and the Tahltan and what they have achieved. It's quite remarkable. But, you know, I could point to great successes in forestry on Vancouver Island with the Huwaiyat First Nation, for example. Things are on the move. There's some great positive economic reconciliation efforts in our province right now.
For sure. So I guess everybody's different. That might make your job a little more difficult. So I'll let you get back to it right away, Minister Rankin. I guess I wanted to end on an optimistic note. What makes you optimistic about negotiations with the Wet'suwet'en and with all First Nations in BC?
What makes me optimistic is the point in history where we're doing this work. We had every member of the legislature in British Columbia stand up in 2019 in support of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People Act. It wasn't an NDP or a Liberal or a Green initiative. It was all members from all parts of this province that recognize we have to get on with the work of reconciliation. I mentioned at the outset, Chris, that I had done this work many, many years ago, almost 30 years ago initially, and there's been an enormous change in people's attitude, the readiness of Indigenous people to embrace these changes. The young people would also be a source of great hope, because this next generation of Indigenous leaders with whom I'm dealing now are inspirational. You mentioned President Chad Day. There are many other people like that up and down the coast and all parts of the province that are truly inspirational. So I'm very, very hopeful about the work we're doing and how it's going to make things better, I think, for Indigenous and non-Indigenous people in our province in the years to come. It's an exciting time.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much for your time, Minister Rankin, and good luck in all your negotiations.
Thanks so much. Really enjoyed it.